Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on this Sunday morning. Next Saturday, Books by the Banks, the Cincinnati USA Book Festival, takes place at the Duke Energy Convention Center with dozens of authors and lots of book fans. You can find a link to Books by the Banks at wvxu.org. One of the writers visiting will be Mary Kay Carson, author of The Bat Scientist, the latest installment of the Scientists in the Field series. And she's talking with Thane Maynard about the book's work with the Bat Conservation International and the threat to bats from the deadly white nose syndrome.
Well, Mary Kay Carson, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Thane.
Now, of course, we hear about your book, but first, we should go ahead and say you and I go way back because you graduated from the Zoo Academy High School.
Yes, 30 years ago? No.
Time flies. Yeah. Isn't that wild? Yeah, and you were saying one of your teachers was Dick Mills, who was a great guy. He was at the zoo for years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that is great. And I always tease and introduce you as the smartest person to ever go to the Zoo Academy High School. But you did prosper, not just with this book, but went on. Tell a bit where you went to college. I think you did Peace Corps.
I actually got a Bachelor of Science degree at the University of Kansas in ecology.
Yeah, very good school in biology.
Joined the Peace Corps and did a stint in fisheries over in the Dominican Republic.
That is great.
And then I served as a fisheries observer on a boat in Alaska for the National Marine Fisheries Service. And then I went back to grad school to learn about writing.
That is great. It's great. And I know you've done a number of books, and famously once before we talked about when you did the one about Terry Roth and our work with rhinos at our zoo. And then this one is called The Bat Scientist. I very much encourage people to get this book. I see naturally lots of books on animals, but this is part of a great series from Houghton Mifflin, one of the best nonfiction publishers in the world, and part of a series called Scientists in the Field. So tell a bit about these crazy bat experts.
Well, a number of them, the majority of them featured in the book, are part of Bat Conservation International, which is a conservation group out of Austin, but it's very much a group of scientists. And they work all over the world, but a number of them, you know, have projects here in the U.S. And so we went down there to meet their founder, who is now the president emeritus. Merlin Tuttle.
He's certainly the most famous bat guy. Yeah.
He's a very famous bat guy. I mean, if it weren't for him, people wouldn't even be talking about conserving bats. I mean, he basically made bat conservation what it is through his photographs because he took photographs for National Geographic that were the first photos published of bats that weren't looking tortured and scary. And so he did all these beautiful photographs of nectar-eating bats, silver saguaro cactus, and all of these unique kinds of fishing bats from all over the world, and really opened up people's appreciation of bats. So we went down there to meet with him and go have a life-changing trip into Bracken Bat Cave, which is, I think it's halfway between about San Antonio and Austin, but it's the largest colony of mammals in the entire world.
Wow. So how many live in there?
About 20 million, sorry, 20 million mother bats.
Whoa.
And their babies. And it's just in the summertime. It's a maternity colony. And it's hot, which is why they like it, because unlike hibernating bats that want a cool cave, these are maternity colonies, and you know the mothers have to leave them there most of the night to go hunt, and so it needs to be hot. They need to stay hot. So it was 100 degrees. You had to wear a respirator because the ammonia was so intense. You had to wear rubber boots up to our knees because you're walking through guano, which isn't really the problem, but the guano is full of dermestid beetles.
Oh, boy.
Which are biting beetles, and they're the ones that actually make all the ammonia as they break. As they eat the guano, it's actually their waste product that makes so much ammonia.
Now, see, I never knew that. That's pretty cool. And that is a lot of bat poop, no doubt about it. Now, I know one of the early photographs in your book, and by the way, we should also say your photos are by Tom Uhlman, who's your husband and an old pal of mine as well, who grew up at the zoo. So that is terrific. Tell Tom hi. But one of your early photos is some folks on a bridge silhouetted with bats flying by. Mm-hmm. And if I had not read and heard that story, I might have thought, well, that was sort of Photoshop, people standing and bats flying by. But tell a bit about
that. It's a very famous – actually, that's how Bat Conservation International ended up in Austin. is they have a very famous bat colony. When they redid the bridge that is Austin is the capital, and downtown it goes over. It's actually part of a lake, part of that the river flows into. They redid the bridge, just, you know, a regular highway project. But when they did it, they put the undercarriage of the bridge are big concrete slabs that just happen to have little cracks in them about an inch and three quarters, mm-hmm. which is perfect, which is, you know, your bat house crack. And so all of these Mexican free-tail bats, which come up in the summertime to breed, just mm-hmm. like the ones in Bracken Bat Cave, took up residence underneath this bridge. And people were freaked out. And they wanted to, you know, have them exterminated. And people were going around saying it's a public health problem. And Bat Conservation International really stepped in with an educational campaign. And they moved their offices down there. And Austin now loves their bats.
Exactly.
And they have a bat fest. And we were down there in the summertime, and any night of the week, the middle of a week, a Wednesday night, you go down there and there's families picnicking on the hill just waiting for the bats to come out. And people are selling, you know, little glow balls. And, you know, it's great. And it's an amazing thing to see all those bats come out, because they drop out and they kind of spiral around towards the river and they go all the way to the horizon. And it's like a stream of bats all the way to the horizon, and they're still coming out.
I know.
So it's
amazing.
A fascinating.
I've seen it.
It's something to see.
It's millions.
Put it on your life list.
And, you know, there's those signs around Austin mm-hmm. that say keep Austin weird. And so I think a thing over time, thanks to Merlin Tuttle and BCI, folks really dig it. You know, so they aren't saying, oh, boo-hoo, I'm scared of bats, which is good, because right here in the tri-state, I'll run into people who say, I don't know, you know, my mom lives in an older house, it's wooden and it has bats in the attic. Yeah. Is that dangerous? And heck, I lived in a house like that for 30 years, yeah. and I don't think it's been dangerous.
No. And in Texas even, it's not so much, I mean, towns are actually jealous of Austin. And now the Texas Department of Highway, the default measurement for the cracks in the concrete is exactly bat size. So they have to have a reason not to have it that size now. Other than, you know, just by coincidence. And so other towns want their own bats.
And certainly not because they're weird, but because actually these bats are a great benefit.
Yes, especially the cotton farmers get a huge benefit out of the pests that they eat, as well as the corn farmers. You know, they say it saves millions of dollars in pesticides every year.
Well, and I know certainly in my backyard, you'll see them swooping around and they're eating, among other things, nearly their body weight in mosquitoes on a summer night.
A tiny, tiny little brown bat, which is a tiny bat, can eat thousands of mosquitoes in a night. They
Isn't
say
that
wild? 1,000 an hour, which I don't really know how that's possible to actually chew and swallow 1,000 an hour. But I guess they don't really chew.
They scoop them up, yeah. Well, bats are phenomenal and bats are diverse. And I should, I think, make a pitch for your book as well. Looking closely at the cover of a couple of vampire bats smiling at us, those might be residents
of
Cincinnati
Zoo.
They surely
are. They surely are.
That is great. Another nice thing about this book, as with your others, in part of a series like this, this is not, quote unquote, what listeners might have in their mind as a children's book. This has a lot of incredibly good information about current research. You know, the title is The Bat Scientist, and it really gets into what does modern bat research and conservation look like.
And there's sort of no worse time for bats right now in North mm-hmm. America. Whereas all the bats in Texas are doing well, the bats in this part of the country are dying from a plague. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no other word for it.
It's called white nose syndrome,
yeah. and it's a fungal infection. It's already killed more than a million bats.
Mm. And just over the last 4 years
Just 2006 is when they first found it in New York, and it's literally moving this way like a plague. And mm-hmm. it'll probably be in Kentucky next year. Mm. And they've already closed a lot of the Carter Caves has closed a lot mm-hmm. of its caves to visitors. And I'm not sure Mammoth hasn't closed their big cave, but there's some other caves that are closed to try to prevent contamination from people mm-hmm. going from one cave to another who might track the fungus in on their clothing. Mm-hmm. And they're already the really sad part is that they're predicting at least regional extinctions, mm-hmm. if not even larger.
You know, it's such a challenging time on that question about introduced species. Mm-hmm. You know, there are famous ones where somebody brings a plant or they bring a big vertebrate and put it somewhere.
Bush
like
honeysuckle.
The famous, yeah, exactly. No kidding. Or the famous, you know, giant Burmese pythons down in South Florida. But in the case of a fungus like this, man, it's hard to stop. And yet my understanding is in reading in Europe that fungus has been there and bats have over a long period of time, I guess, lived with it. But here it's new.
Right. And they think, you know, the first cave that it was discovered in New York is, you know, sort of a mammoth kind of cave. It's a big tourist cave with hundreds and hundreds of visitors every year. And, you know, they think probably somebody tracked it in on their shoes or clothing unknowingly. But it reminds me sometimes of, if you remember the West Nile that came through 5 or 6 years ago and killed a lot of hawks and things. And then it was just the animals who were resistant to it that repopulated. It's not going to be that same kind of scenario with bats because they reproduce so slowly. Mm-hmm. One bat has one pup a year at most.
And they live a long time.
And they live a long time. And they already have a lot of other pressures on them as far as having enough habitat to roost in. You know, there's especially the cave species, which that's what we're talking about here with the bat plague. They're only the cave species of bats, which are about half of our bats in the U.S.,
Say just a little bit about the diversity of bats, because a lot of people think, oh, one bat's another bat, but man alive, there's a lot of bats.
There's a lot of bats. Our continent is sort of poorly diversified compared to other continents. Basically, the more heat you have, the more different kinds of bats you have. So the most diverse places for bats are the tropics, where they have flying foxes, which they still have at the zoo, right? That are literally the size of chihuahuas with wings to tiny bumblebee bats, you know, are not quite the size of a bumblebee, but definitely the size of a hummingbird that live in the Caribbean. But even here in the U.S., most of our bats, all of our bats in Ohio are insect eater bats. Mm-hmm. But we also have out west, there are a couple of nectar eating bats. They're called long-nosed bats, and they have long tongues that drink the nectar. And Mexico has vampire bats. And once you start getting south, you get into more of the fruit bats. So, but even in Ohio, people don't realize because you don't see them. But, you know, we have red bats, which are these lovely bats that are the color of red hair. And they kind of have little buffalo faces, you know, big bushy hair. And we have hoary bats, and which have a nice silver streak. And, you know, we have some bat diversity here. It's hard to see them.
Exactly. And you mentioned that you'll be at Bat Fest, which is at the Museum Center on October 30th. And while it's fun for everybody, there's also a good chance to learn a lot about bats as well.
Yeah, they have live bats.
Yeah, they have there, as we do at the zoo. But at Bat Fest, they can catch up with you, get your book, and maybe get it signed.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Mary Kay, thank you for coming in. It was fun to see you again. Yeah. My guest has been Mary Kay Carson, author of the new book, The Bat Scientist. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.